Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour, only on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area, DAB and RadioReverb.com online. You can contact us at hivhour@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter and Instagram at hiv_hour. You can also listen and subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify, iTunes and Deezer. Just type in HIV Hour. So if you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on the Monday and Tuesday at noon. Or indeed, you can catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening. How are you all?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, good thanks. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Yeah, I've had a week off, so I'm back to the grindstone and just getting back into it. Not too bad. How about you, Tony?
Yeah, doing all right. Yeah, just prepare for the C word in Christmas. And trying to make sure everyone's organized and get myself organized. And what about you, Mr. Stewart? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty much the same as well. I've just got my tree set up. I'm looking at some stuff as a bit of a follow-up for the story that I did a few weeks ago about rough sleepers, but you'll hear more about that in the show. But yeah, keeping well.
Yeah, I think just to say the track at the beginning of the show was Camel Fat, Easier, and the MK remix. So good track. And what about you, Sue? How are you?
Yes, feeling... Do you know when you get to that stage where you feel as though you need a break?
Yeah.
I can't wait for it to end. But, I mean, it's been... what a year it's been. I think we're going to be talking about that on next week's show, aren't we? What a year
Christmas
it's
special.
Been. But I'll be... I'm getting ready to sort of wind down and put my feet up for a little while and just... get a bit of sort of, ready for 2021. But there we go.
Yeah, Christmas is going to be a weird time, isn't it? I mean, I don't know whether I'm just going to keep it quiet, really.
Yeah.
I don't even know what we're able to do still, do you?
It's a bit of a mess, I think, but anyway.
Socially distanced Christmas crackers.
Yeah. Yes, that'd be nice. Zooming Christmas cracks.
So, what's on the my plate will be socially distanced.
Yes. So, what's on the show?
Well, we have part two of Jonathan Blake's story, and just to point out that Jonathan, he was actually one of the first people in the UK to be diagnosed with HIV, along with Terry Higgins.
Yeah.
So he's been diagnosed about 38 years, and we played half of his story on the World AIDS Day show. And basically, he's going to be talking in his second part about, HIV, been diagnosed all those years. He's 72, I think, or 73. Still looks amazing. Still looks amazing in his kilt and everything else he wears. But he just sort of finishes off his the second part of just reiterating HIV is no longer a death sentence, and we need more than ever to find out about HIV. Get tested. There's lots of help and support out there. And he sort of reiterates that in the end of his sort of part two of his story.
Fabulous. Okay. Looking forward to listen to that. It was good. It was part one was great, actually, wasn't it? It's good to listen to. And you've got a story as well, Stuart, haven't you?
Yeah. It's just a bit more about the homeless situation for during the COVID-19 period in Brighton and Hove, when people were being given the opportunity to have a test for HIV and a screening for Hep C. It's a bit more of a follow-up from that, and so I'll talk more about that during the show.
Let me tell you about a thrill.
Radio Reverb. So welcome back to the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We got the part two of Sue's fantastic interview with Jonathan Blake, which we aired part one on World AIDS Day So let's have a listen to the rest of this fantastic interview.
What was really amazing was the fact that I had a roof over my head. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. one of the really important things, you know, you're living with this virus mm-hmm. is to at least have somewhere that you can call home.
Yes.
Well, I certainly need it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think anybody that needs it, you know, that at least, you know, you have got a roof over your head.
Yeah.
Like sort of once I sort of joined the co-op, I was very open about my status.
Right.
I just felt that it was important. And, mm-hmm. you know, in those days, there was sort of, you know, they were terrible times. There was lots of death and dying and, mm-hmm. and people sort of getting sort of just awful diagnoses. I mean, the worst of it sort of was really sort of cancers like opposed to sarcoma.
Yeah.
These terrible sort of red blotches sort of on your face, on your body, what have you. Mm-hmm. But also CMV retinitis. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest sort of killer was probably kind of pneumocystic pneumonia. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was PCP. That was sort of, you know. So it was, they were bleak. But yeah. as well as them being bleak, you know, there were these extraordinary things that happened. I mean, I was involved with Lesbian and Gay Men Support the Miners. Mm-hmm. And so we had a miner strike. Well, for me, all these things are really important because they're displacement activities. Mm-hmm. And I really do end displacement activities. I think that you know, they keep your soul going.
Yeah.
And it's a way of feeding. And of course, that was just an amazing kind of sort of an amazing year. I mean, sort of 84 to 85, there was so much going on, you know, with that. And the sort of the South Wales miners just, you know, given what they were going through, the generosity, you know, that showed to us. And what was also amazing was that, you know, in no way was I made to feel an outsider or a leper. One was just sort of welcomed, you know, as who I was. Mm-hmm. And that was something, you know, which again is really, really important. Then also what there was another amazing way of displacement activities. Ken Livingstone, and I know Ken Livingstone, you know, is deemed to be a difficult operator. But when he was leader of the GC, that was the sort of the Greater London Council, which preceded the now GLA, the late Greater London Authority. He created this situation where if you were out of work and unemployed, you could pay £1 and you could do any number of courses for a year at City Lit, Moy College, any adult education place. I mean, it was the most amazing situation. And of course, sort of, you know, Nigel and I sort of, you know, took all kinds of opportunities to go and do all sorts of things. I remember there was sort of one day that he and a friend of his, Barry Protheroe, were going to do this trouser making class. And I said, oh, that sounds fun. Can I come along too? yeah, the more the merrier. So along we go, and it was being held in a what had been an old school off Tulse Hill, so very close by. And it was up in what had been the old chemistry laboratories. So they had these big tables that you had to sort of to get up and sit on. And there was this lovely elderly Jewish tailor called Harry. And the first thing Harry said to us, right, I want you to all sit cross-legged on the table. Well, my father used to sell furniture. If you ever sat on a table, you were screamed at, get off the table, chairs are sitting on the table. So how, with one sentence, had given me permission.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm cross-legged, sort of doing the stitches. And I think, well, how many pairs of trousers do I need? What actually I really need to learn is how to make a pattern. So somebody pipes up, oh, they do that at the London College of Fashion. So I go to the London, I think, right, I should go and enroll. I've paid my pound. So I go down to the London College of Fashion and I enroll for this pattern making class. And I'm loving it. You know, it was just, it really kind of sort of treat my interest.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so while I'm doing it, one of the tutors says, oh, by the way, I don't know, you might be interested, but we run a 3-year City and Guild diploma in tailoring. Might you be interested? And I thought, well, I'm going to be dead before I sort of...
So, Jonathan, can I just come in there? So, still at this time, you were still thinking after all those... Because, I mean, how many years had passed since you were knocking on the door and getting, you know, paid your pound, and how many years since your diagnosis?
Well, this would have been somewhere around about sort of 87, so it's not that long.
Right, okay, right.
Oh, no. You know, I mean, sort of, one was continually thinking that God, you know, I've been really fortunate, but yeah, but it's going to happen. Because it was happening to people.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Mark Ashton, who was one of the founders with Mike Jackson of Lesbian Gay Men Support the Minors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got was feeling ill, and within 10 days he was dead.
Yeah.
So it was happening. And what was happening was that, you know, people were getting basically diagnosed late.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there wasn't a huge amount of information. You know, I mean, the Terence Higgins Trust, I mean, Terry Higgins died in July 82,
mm-hmm,
and it was his friends who created the Terence Higgins Trust because right, there was nothing.
Yes,
you I know, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, so sort of to get information was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And you know, you even the sort of the doctors, the consultants, didn't know what was happening. Everything was really, really new.
Yeah.
You know, and there was no medication. One forgets that mm-hmm, you know, we're now, you know, blessed with the fact that not only do we have a National Health Service, but we have access
mm-hmm
to medication.
Yeah.
And so sort of the whole kind of sort of the whole dynamic has changed.
I mean, I'm just interested in Jonathan. At any time were you ever offered anything? Because we hear back in the day, we hear a lot about AZT. Were you ever offered that?
Oh God. I mean, there was a trial called the Concord trial, and this would have been in about, God, I think that would have been 1987. I think that would be the year.
Yeah.
And I remember them sort of saying, oh, well, you know, what we have is we have a cohort, and basically we cut the whole cohort in half, and one half will get the placebo, the other half will get the medication.
Right.
And I just said, because it seemed to me to make sense, well, will you kind of pair us off? So someone who's got like a similar build or metabolism as myself, will I get sort of, you know, either the pill or the medication and the other, so that, you know, we're paired off? Oh, no, no, no. They said that's far too complicated. And I just kind of saw red.
Right.
And I went, well, now, I said, if you could put a line down the middle of me, I mean, this is just absurd, but you put the line down the middle of me and you give one half of me the pill and the other half the placebo, and we'll see which side does best. That, I think, is a... But if you can't do that, I am not prepared to do your trial.
Right.
So that's that. And basically, that's the reason that I believe that I'm here today. Because in those days, you know, AZT turned out to be a failed chemotherapy drug.
Right.
And in those days, chemotherapy drugs basically worked in that they completely wiped out your whole immune system, because they wanted to wipe out the cancer, so they just cleared everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've got no helper cells, helper T cells. You'd got nothing. Just everything was wiped out of the bone marrow. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, left you open to opportunistic infections.
Yeah, of course.
And it was the opportunistic infections which were killing people.
Yeah.
So as I say, you know, that is the reason that I kind of feel that that I am, the reason that I'm sort of here today was because of that. So really, there was nothing. I mean, what was interesting was that early on, when I was sort of was not a persona non grata, one was having MRI scans to see what was happening in the brain, because they knew that there was this blood-brain barrier, and that sort of, you know, that tended to stop infections getting to the brain. And they wanted to see whether or not this virus, this now called the HI, the human immunodeficiency virus, was actually able sort of to break that.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You've just been listening to Jonathan Blake, well, one of Jonathan's favourite songs, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles. What does that song say to you, Jonathan? It's one of the ones you like, isn't it, when we asked you?
Yeah, no. Well, you know, I always sort of, I love the Shirelles, I love Carole King, and I think sort of, you know, it's asking the question. I think sort of, you know, it's one of these things, you know, given that one felt one was a sort of pariah and sort of, you know, a modern day leper, it's a really good question to ask to people, will you still love me tomorrow?
great song. So when we sort of cut for your song, you were talking about how you're still today, and you put that down to is not taking that AZT that was offered back in the day, and so we sort of start again on that, on how, which is amazing you're still here today because of that.
Well, all right. I mean, sort of what I really want to do is kind of sort of, you know, jump forward. Because what was extraordinary was that I retrained, I became a tailor, and then I worked at English National Opera making costumes. And that was great up until 1996. And in 1996, my health gave out. And I was basically medically retired.
Right.
And that was sort of, that was that. And once I had kind of got sort of over that, my HIV consultant, who I had sort of joined in 1990, and at that point he had said, look, what we're going to do is we're going to see if you tolerate Ceptrin. Ceptrin was this really inexpensive antibiotic, which if you could tolerate it, would keep PCP at bay, this pneumocystic pneumonia at bay. And luckily I could tolerate it. So he put me on to that and I kept getting shingles and herpes. So he put me on acyclovir, and basically that's what I was on up until 1996. But in 1996, once I had got over the shingles and I had it internally on the phrenic nerve, so I hiccuped nonstop for 10 days, he said, look, now is the time that you're going to have to bite the bullet and start on the medications, the antiretroviral, the heart, right, the antiretroviral therapy. So he worked out therapy. It was twice a day. And I remember starting to take it. First week, nothing. Second week, nothing. Third week, nothing. And I'm thinking, what is this? I mean, why am I shoving all this stuff into my body and nothing's doing it? I woke up on the morning of the fourth week and I had got so much energy, it was unbelievable. So much energy that I laid a patio outside my bedroom window.
Oh my goodness.
And I'd never done anything like that in my life. I mean, but that was it. You know, it was extraordinary. And I think I was really lucky in terms that I hadn't taken anything until 96. By 96, they were beginning to kind of sort of get a handle on these medications. And then in 1997, viral load testing came in and suddenly everything changed because they begin to tell how much virus you had in your body. And they could also tell whether or not sort of, you know, that the virus was getting around some of your pills. So it was a huge kind of game changer. And sort of, you know, in a way, I've been, I suppose, one of the very lucky, you know, part of the generation of people sort of with HIV that have gone through it, that from when there was nothing to now when we just have this range of medications, and the medications are far more tolerable than they ever were. I mean, to begin with, they were really difficult and really toxic. And I think that it's become much easier, the formulations, and there is a choice of pills. So before, you know, you just got monotherapy and then it was dual therapy and then it's triple therapy, and now there's lots of triple therapy. And again, I mean, I have to underline how lucky we are that we live in a country still that has a national health service, so that, you know, anybody in terms of needing medication gets access to it. And that makes all the difference. And of course, you know, there have been sort of incredible sort of differences. I mean, to the point, and I'm now going to just divest, because one of the most important things is that if you are undetectable on your medication, it means that you cannot transmit your virus. I cannot pass my virus on. And here it is.
Yes, I can
see it. Undetectable equals untransmittable.
Did you ever imagine back in when you were first diagnosed that you would be saying that today, Jonathan?
No. I mean, I'm 71. I was diagnosed when I was 33. I mean, no. You know, I had no idea. And actually, you know, up until I would say probably about 6 years ago, I wouldn't even have thought it. Still, you know, I was amazed that I hit 40, then that I hit 50, then that I hit 50 and 60. See, and then that I hit 70. I mean, it's just absurd.
You must be here for a reason, Jonathan.
I don't, if only I can think that my parents, bless them, must have given me just a remarkable set of genes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really do not know. But I do think that what is important, and I suppose I've been really fortunate in terms of that, is that I have a pretty positive outlook mm-hmm. on life.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of helps. And that's difficult, you know, because we all get depressed and things are difficult. So I don't want to sort of be saying that for people to kind of go, oh, well, I can't be positive and it's awful and what's his name, mm-hmm. you know, but one has to try and find, mm-hmm. you know, just ways of keeping yourself buoyant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy.
No.
You know,
no.
And I realize that I have been very, very fortunate, and I don't know why, you know, but I have, in terms of sort of the way that things have happened. And what was great was that in 1996, when I was sort of, you know, medically retired, there were drop-in centers. There were places that you could go to. So I was fortunate. There was a place called The Landmark in Brixton. So I went there and I volunteered. So I used to volunteer on reception. And I thought, you know, it's a nice place to be because you're meeting the people as they're coming in and lots of people are arriving in crisis. And if one can just make them feel, you know, at ease, you know, then that's my job.
Jonathan, what would you say to people that are newly diagnosed today in 2020 with HIV? What inspiring words, what advice would, knowing what you've been through?
My advice would be to absolutely, you know, take on board that you have this diagnosis, as difficult as it is, you know, it is no longer terminal, you know. So embrace the medication, you know, learn as much as you can about it and adhere, because mm-hmm. that's the most important thing. And it is difficult, you know, people lead chaotic lives for all kinds of reasons, but if they can just kind of take a handle mm-hmm. and adhere to the drugs, and the drug regimes are much easier, you know. Now my HIV medication is once a day.
Yes.
So it's not onerous. Before, it used to be sort of three, even four times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, one of the things when I started my medication, and I said, you know, after 4 weeks, I laid the patio and it was amazing. It was amazing for 12 months. And then it turned on me.
Right.
And I developed peripheral neuropathy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had terrible pains in my hands and particularly my feet. And that's mm-hmm. never gone away. I mean, it's something that I've got to live with.
Sure.
But God, I mean, sort of, I've been so fortunate that there's medication that I take every day to mm-hmm. deal with that.
Yeah.
So sort of, that would be, you know, the most important thing is adherence, difficult as that is.
Yeah. May I ask you something, Jonathan? How important do you think it is that we remember, and especially the younger generation growing up, and I'm talking about in our education situation, how important do you think it is that we should still remember what it used to be like when we didn't have the medication, when we didn't have the acceptance we have now of, okay, we still need to work on it, but how do you, you know? So
the difficulty is that there is no way that the younger generation can have any notion of what it was like. Mm. You know, to me, what I felt that it was like was that I felt that it must have been what it would have been like for the troops in the First World War in the trenches. Sure. You know, there's no way mm-hmm. that they can know that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's important that they know the history.
Yes.
That they try and find yes. out about the history.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, what is really interesting is that I was lucky in terms that I'm was part of a documentary called After 82. And that talks about the early years of HIV. Because there was nothing. You know, yeah. there was lots of films and documentaries in the States about it. And I mean, yeah. amazing, you know, How to Survive a Plague.
Yes, I mean, I remember.
But sort of there was nothing in this country. Now there is. Mm-hmm. There is a wonderful organization called the National HIV Trust. And Paul Coleman, who was sort of was one of the powers behind that, has recorded 100 interviews with people living with HIV, doctors, nurses, what have you. They're all held in the Metropolitan Archive in London.
Wow, okay.
They're there so people can access them and get mm-hmm. that information. So there is information around. There is a wonderful documentary by someone called Lee Chislett. Lee Chislett created 56 Dean Street
right.
because he felt that there were not most sort of HIV centres or special clinics were so dark and dank and what have you. And he, you know, had been to Chelsea and Westminster where he was sort of working and said, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. Mm. And they said, well, all right, you know, present us with a plan, an action plan, and we'll fund it. And that's how 56 Dean Street mm-hmm. came in. And it's a wonderful place because it's light and airy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, so it's knowing one's history,
yes.
finding out where
yes. you
get information. And there's lots of, you know, there's magazines like iBase. So mm-hmm. it's all there. There are
yes.
organizations such as, you know, Terence Higgins Trust,
yes.
where you can get places. You know, up in Liverpool, there's a wonderful organisation called Sahir House, mm-hmm. or the George House Trust in Manchester. So there are all these places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, so
just, the information is there. The
information is there, and mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. to try and get hold of that is what's important. And that will be your lifeboat.
Yes.
That will be your yes. raft, and that'll see you through.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be ashamed. There is no shame in being HIV positive.
Absolutely.
I mean,
not.
I could pull out another t-shirt.
If only they could see you, Jonathan. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. No shame about being HIV
positive.
Love it. Love it. And that's a great sort of message to follow on. And, you know, you don't have to be on your own. You've more or less said that, you know, there's help and the support. There's some fantastic organisations out there that, you know, they're willing and they want to help and support you going through that diagnosis. And I do agree with you. Knowing the history, I think, is important, but also knowing where we've come to what we have now.
Well, yes.
What we have now was amazing.
But I also think what is really, really important to also people remember, it can affect anybody.
Anyone.
You
yes.
know, it is not, and it doesn't matter sort of, you know, what your religion, creed, colour, nothing. It can affect anybody.
Yeah.
You know, no one is immune to it.
No.
But, you know, one of the, you know, things where we're really fortunate, I think, is that, you know, it is not as virulent as mm-hmm. COVID is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a huge difference yeah. between what COVID does to the body
yeah.
and what HIV does to the body. You know, HIV is this slow burn
yes.
and this build up. And if you don't get tested, mm-hmm. then sort of you don't know. And that's the other thing that I would say to people. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, we have the medication. So be brave,
mm-hmm.
test. Get yes. yourself tested, know your status, because yes. once you know your status, you can deal with it. If you're negative, marvelous, but yeah. keep testing. And yeah. if you're positive, then go and get the medication and just knuckle down to it.
Yeah. And what great words to finish on. Jonathan, we could speak forever, but we've got to come to the end. Thank you so much for giving us your time. You know, we'd love to have you on again. And thank you so much. Some great words of wisdom there. And yeah, thank you so much. And keep still well and keep strong. And keep doing what you're doing, because I know you do a lot. You do a lot of stuff. I know that. You've only sort of touched on a little bit today, haven't you? So thank you so much.
Radio Reverb.
Making music night and day.
Oh, 97.2 FM.
Hey guys, it's Tony. I'm just doing a really quick story that comes from Mexico. Mexico will participate with 150 volunteers for a phase 3 of what could be a vaccine against HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, that the Belgian pharmaceutical company Janssen has been developing. On December the 2nd was when the news of a possible vaccine against HIV was announced. It finally has reached phase 3 in clinical trials. The international project called Mosaic has begun the process of recruiting volunteers who will participate in this study, which aims to search for the effectiveness of the vaccine. According to EFE agency, there are 8 countries that will test efficiency of this vaccine against the AIDS virus. And Mexico is there. Amongst the participating health institutions in the Aztec country are the Institute of Medical Sciences and Nutrition, Salvador Zubrán, the Condesa Instipalpa Specialized Clinic, the Benjamin Suplivda Amor Clinic in Mexico City, the Guadalajara Civil Hospital, and Merida Medical Care and Health Research Unit. I do apologise about my pronunciations, I really do. Among the countries will participate with volunteers for the vaccine will be Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Italy, Peru, Poland, Spain and the United States. The research aims to enrol 3,800 people worldwide. The participation of 150 Mexicans was advised by Andrea Gonzalez, director of the Center of Prevention of Comprehensive Care for HIV and AIDS in Mexico City, who is in charge for this application of the 150 volunteers. Taking into account all of the above I've just stated, the study participants must undergo surveillance for a minimum of 12 months, in which they have to attend the clinic on an average of 14 times and receive a total of 6 injections during that entire study, according to the information from the official website. Through all social networks, the process has begun to get the volunteers to participate in this trial. This is absolutely an amazing trial to try and get this vaccine up and running. Unfortunately, 2020 has been one of those years where vaccines and that sort of thing have been in the forefront of everyone's mind, especially with COVID-19. So I want to say I wish, the Mexican government and for the worldwide study for this vaccine every success. We need to stop new infections, and that needs to be, you know, the number one priority. You know, stop new infections, and if there can be a vaccine brought forward, that'd be absolutely totally amazing. Anyway, my name's Tony, and thank you for listening to this very short report on the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Hello, and welcome to the HIV Hour. A month or so ago, I talked about Brighton Hove's homeless who were being moved off the streets and into hotels or hostels, and were also being offered HIV testing and screening for hepatitis B and C. So I have an update on this, and that is that the Co-op supermarket has got fully behind this initiative and gives it its full backing and support. The Martin Fisher Foundation charity has been selected by the Co-op Local Community Fund as one of the three charities that Co-op members can raise money for from October 2020 to October 2021. How it works is, firstly, you need to be a Co-op member. And if you're not already a Co-op member, then you can do so very easily by going online and going to co-op.co.uk/membership. That's co-op.co.uk/membership, and select the Martin Fisher Foundation as your chosen charity. Then, while shopping at the Co-op, you can get your Co-op card scanned at the checkout and the money will be donated automatically to the charity. You can do this in any of their UK stores across the whole country. The Martin Fisher Foundation needs to raise more money to support their initiative testing programme of screening for blood-borne viruses, otherwise known as BBV, in rough sleepers in Brighton and Hove. A successful pilot study has already been carried out by the charity, but reaching out to our most vulnerable people during these hard times is still very important and absolutely vital. The Martin Fisher Foundation would extend the bloodborne viruses testing project they are currently doing for rough sleepers to the rest of the untested homeless community who are living in hostels and supported accommodation and bed and breakfasts throughout Brighton and Hove. The charity's vision is to eliminate new HIV infection by the year 2030, which is like 9 years away. So we still have a lot of work to do, but we can do it. We can get there. Their purpose is to facilitate the citywide HIV prevention response, working together towards common goals, striving for innovation in HIV prevention and care, as well as advancing public awareness of HIV to reduce stigma that still surrounds this virus. So please get involved. Let's raise some money for people who need to access services, people that are cold on the streets, that still haven't been given the opportunity to be tested, who could be tested and access treatments and, you know, have a healthier, safer life. This is a very, very massively important thing that's being done here. Please get involved. I'm Stuart Brennan. This is the HIV Hour. You've been listening to me on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Fabulous. Well, great show, guys.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So next week is our Christmas special. So, that'd be nice. And we're coming up to the
big Christmas day. Christmas songs. Josh, I know you love them.
Love them.
I thought you did.
So, so we'll catch you next week. And everyone out there, take care.
Take care, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Bye.